This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
All right, so start texting in your petties, 713-572-4610. Getting a few of them on there. We will get to them, I promise. The PettyCast. Show is petty all the time, but at 8 a.m. on Tuesday, we take it up a notch and we highlight our own petties. We highlight the petties of those around the world. And Seth, a once great New England Patriot and host here at Sports Radio 610, once told me back in 2017, nobody is more petty than Bill Belichick. Nobody. And that
nobody.
That person was Ted Johnson.
If Belichick were to learn that he was being heavily featured on our petty cast, he would have an assistant somewhere write our names down.
Yes.
Just in case.
Yep.
Probably would never need it, but just in case.
Yep.
You'd want to know.
An assistant who he may or may not be sleeping with. Exactly. Exactly. Before we get to the petty Bill Belichick audio from his CBS interview on Sunday, he's promoting a book. We all know the story. He's in the last 10 months ago, he found a woman by the name of Jordan Hudson, who's in her mid-20s, and they're in a relationship. Reportedly met on a plane. We will hear him getting asked about where they met shortly. But she is not only his significant other, but also his assistant. She says chief operating officer of Belichick Productions at the bottom of emails, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
But she is, put it this way, Seth, regardless of what the title is, she's heavily embedded in both Bill Belichick's business and the business of the University of North Carolina football program.
Right. She's attached on all emails involving anything PR, media, or anything
that's
like
right,
that.
That's right. That's right. So Bill Belichick did this interview with CBS Sunday morning. It was an 8-minute interview. It was an 8-minute piece. I don't know how long the interview was. Reportedly, the whole thing was a train wreck. We got more and more details coming out. We're going to play some audio from it in just a second. Petty audio. But the reports involving Jordan Hudson and her involvement, if you watch the video, if you watch the interview, you know, she was sitting off to the side at a desk, kind of monitoring everything. And reportedly, as you're going to hear in a minute, she was heavily involved in the overall shaping of the interview and the questions, to the point where at one point she got so frustrated, she walked out of the room and they had to sit around for 30 minutes waiting for her to come back.
Yeah.
There was a long delay.
Yeah.
And the University of North Carolina Athletic Department is reportedly, according to TMZ, very concerned about her involvement with the program right now.
She looks, like in the snippets you see from this interview, she looks very much like an overly eager and aggressive PR type person that just wants to try to control anything and everything.
Yep.
And those people are annoying whether they're somebody's girlfriend or not.
That's
but especially
right.
Especially when it's somebody's girlfriend.
Somebody's girlfriend, and she's just like overbearing. We'll get to her in a second. This was this might be one of the more petty things we've seen in a long, long time. Robert Kraft, Bill Belichick's book is about his life in football. Zero mention of Kraft in the book, not even in the acknowledgments.
I have to ask about Robert Kraft because 24 years together, 6 Super Bowls. Unless I'm wrong, he's not in this book. How come?
He's not. Well, again, it's about my life lessons in football, and it's really more about the ones that I've experienced directly.
He's not even in the acknowledgement section.
Correct.
Okay. And his girlfriend of 10 months, Jordan Hudson, is in the acknowledgement section.
And it's about, what's the title of the book?
The Art of Winning.
The Art of Winning.
The Art of Winning.
Right. Which in the NFL does involve a certain relationship with the owner. So, it's curious that the guy actually owned the team that, you know, provided the environment for which you won all those Super Bowls. Yeah, just completely absent from the book.
If nothing else, he hired you. He gave you this opportunity that is allowed, you know, your performance
after you've been run out of town in Cleveland.
That's right. That's right.
You would have been smart enough to draft 2 quarterbacks.
Yep.
Not likely.
Maybe this is why Belichick is so petty. It seems there's a disagreement over exactly how the relationship was severed a couple years ago.
Do you feel like you were treated with dignity and respect when you were let go by Robert Kraft?
Yeah, well, it was a mutual decision for us to part ways.
He said fired.
It was a mutual decision.
Okay. It was a mutual decision. In an interview last fall, he talked about it briefly, and he said, I kept him for 24 years. I didn't enjoy having to fire him. So there's at least one instance where Bob Kraft said that he fired Bill Belichick.
Okay, well, there you go. So Belichick petty about that. Now, this is the cut.
Do you believe Bill or Kraft in that? I actually believe Belichick.
I do, too.
Kraft's a weird dude. Yeah. Belichick's weird, but in more of like a normal weird way. Psychotically football coach type of way. But Kraft's weird in a billionaire weird way, which is just, that breaks all the boundaries down.
It was conducted more like a mutual thing. Like, it was, they had a press conference where the two of them were sitting next to each other. You never see that for a firing, you know?
Can you imagine if you mutually broke up with somebody and everything's cool, and then you find out that she's been running around telling everybody she dumped you?
Yeah, that's what that is.
That would drive me insane.
Yes, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. To the point where I would lie and say, no, I dumped her. Yeah.
I'd have to release the hard drive after that.
Yeah.
Sorry, girl. Yeah.
It's a good thing about a divorce is that one side needs to file it and the other one needs to accept the documentation when the courier shows up. You know, there's clarity.
You can't jointly file for divorce.
Well, I guess it depends on the state. Yeah. Maybe so. All right. So here's the big one for Belichick that is getting a lot of run. This was the interviewer for CBS, whose name escapes me, asking Belichick, where'd you meet Jordan?
The other change for Belichick is 24-year-old Jordan Hudson, his creative muse, as he writes in his book.
Make sure that that's the...
Jordan was a constant presence during our interview.
You have Jordan right over there. Everybody in the world seems to be following this relationship. They've got an opinion about your private life. It's got nothing to do with them, but they're invested in it. How do you deal with that?
Never been too worried about what everybody else thinks. Just try to do what I feel like is best for me and what's right.
How did you guys meet?
Not talking about this.
No?
No.
It's a topic neither one of them is comfortable commenting on, though Hudson has recently posted about it on Instagram.
I love that. I had to leave that in there. She don't want to talk about it, but she loves those clicks. Yeah,
there's pictures of them canoodling on Instagram and everything, but you can't talk about something as innocent as, hey, how'd you two guys meet? Now, that's the kind of denial that a young, stupid PR person might make if they're being overly aggressive and trying to control the message or whatever, but they don't realize that in shutting that line of questioning down, it just invites all kinds of speculation.
Yeah.
Like, well, wait a second. Why are you shutting that down?
People are speculating.
I'm going to go digging. Don't look behind this box.
Right.
There's nothing behind this curtain. You're stupid for asking.
Well, the other thing it makes you wonder, especially on the heels of this report about what a nightmare she was during this interview to work with, how many other questions did that guy ask that she jumped in on and said, nope, not going to. The reportedly.
They said it. She was involved multiple times, like kind of stopping the flow of the conversation.
Yeah, and reportedly, like there was supposed to be a second part of this.
Yeah.
And CBS is like, nope. They're like, we'll be lucky to get 8 minutes out of this. You know, like it was so bad. Like that's how it was so bad. CBS said, no, we're not going to do a second one. This was a train wreck.
I like thinking about the book publisher too. When you send the author out to do these interviews and everything to try to hype up the book, and Belichick couldn't look more miserable.
Oh.
Come read my book, I suppose.
Funny because it's funny too because his media persona, and the persona that, granted, has been getting displayed through a Jordan Hudson curated filter at North Carolina, has been a much peppier, more upbeat Bill Belichick since he left. Coaching, when he was a different Belichick on television, I thought, certainly than he was in press conferences sit-down interviews, you know?
No, everybody will tell you that he's different, you know, in different areas of his life. He's more like a normal person. It's just football. He's a football guy. The more and more I feel that Belichick might just be susceptible to a certain type of personality, like with Jack Easterby or with his current girlfriend, where he just wants somebody that can take care of all of those parts of his life that he's not good at. Like the
his blind
any
spots.
Of the social type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think with Easterby, it's almost like he hit the easy button on like, oh, okay, you can have a rapport with players and tell me how they're feeling and act, how to act and everything. And then likewise with Jordan Hudson. Okay, I got to do social media now as a part of being a college coach. Fine. You take care of it. I got to do media. Okay, you take care of it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. Man, that is what it feels like. That's definitely
She's like Easterby with a vagina.
Right. Right. And high knee boots. Don't want to see Easterby in those either.
God, that's hot. Hey, could somebody out there Photoshop me a mashup of Easterby and Jennifer Hudson?
Doing his,
just AI.
Doing his,
or, yeah.
His trip walk in knee high boots up there on the stage.
People in California are all like, hey, dude.
Oh, God.
That clown ran this team for 2 years.
I might need to go back and watch that today.
And then we were in Houston, and people were all like, boy, howdy. But
they had big belt buckles and cowboy hats. All
I
of
hate
them.
Him so much. Oh, my gosh.
All right.
River dance all over. The-
So that was Belichick being petty towards Kraft, and I would say Jordan Hudson being petty towards CBS. We got a few more here. Brandon Bean, the GM of the Buffalo Bills, did an appearance on 5:50 a.m. up in Buffalo on a show hosted by two guys named Jeremy and Joe. And he was listening to their show, the segment before he was coming on, and they were talking about how maybe the Bills hadn't addressed the wide receiver room sufficiently. This was on Monday, I believe. It was after the draft was over. And Brandon Bean, the GM of the Bills, was listening, hearing them criticize the Bills' approach to the wide receiver room, and he came out firing before the first question was even asked in the interview.
You were up late with you on the first round and the second round. It's a busy weekend for you.
Yeah, no, it was. It was. I was just listening to the last few minutes of your show before I came on, waiting on here.
All right.
Sounds like 2018 all over with you guys.
Well, we're very – how so?
Well, you guys were bitching in 2018 about – Josh Allen, you guys wanted Josh Rosen, and now you guys are bitching that we don't have a receiver. I don't get it. Like, we just scored. Hold on, let me talk. Scored 30 points in a row for 8 straight games. A year ago, I get you guys asking why we didn't have receivers, but I don't understand it now. You just saw us lead the league in points when you add all the postseason. No one scored more points than the Buffalo Bills, including the Super Bowl champions. So, you just saw us do it without Stephon Diggs, same group. How is this group not better than last year's group? Like, our job is to score points and win games. Where do we need to get better? Defense. We did that. So I get it. You got to have a show and you got to have something to bitch about. But bitching about wide receiver is one of the dumbest arguments I've heard.
Do you, Mike?
My quick response to that, and I think you agree with this, I try to be pretty cordial and everything, but my quickest response to that would be like, well, we'd like to score more points than the Chiefs. That's what we're hoping to do. I know you scored a lot of points. You guys haven't been able to beat the Chiefs. And yes, I realize defense is an issue because the Chiefs didn't score a lot of points this year in general, and you allowed 32 in that final conference championship game. We just want to score more points than the Chiefs, and we feel like wide receivers would be a good way to go about doing that.
Yeah, yeah. He went on to say in that interview, like, he went to the whole, hey, you got to pick your areas where you spend your resources. We got an all-pro quarterback who we just gave a raise to. We have a really good offensive line that's highly paid. You know, the running back room, you know, he didn't say James Cook, but James Cook is on the verge of, it seems like, holding out for a bigger contract. They got good tight ends. That was sort of his argument for the whole thing. I'm with you. Like, you know, don't tell me about the delivery. Just show me baby, you know?
That was how, because Nick and I will go back and forth on stuff like that because he'll jab at me. Mm-hmm. So I don't feel bad jabbing at him about, like, the time I criticized Kenyon Green and people. The thing that sucks, though, is like whenever you – like Nick and I will go back and forth, immediately there's a faction of the Texans fan base that will grab just whatever I say and act like I was attacking Nick Caserio.
Yeah.
It's always after he says something to me and I need to shut him down.
He started
it. Right, right. It's like, okay, Nick, you don't – all right, you want to play this game? Yeah. Let's go.
Yeah.
And then I do a – I'm pretty good when I want to be with that stuff.
Right, right.
But then I get the psychotics that think I'm just this a-hole out there attacking Nick Caserio.
It's the life you've chosen, my man. This is the life you've chosen.
Yeah, but I side with Billy Beane on that as far as just going out and getting
Brandon,
a position. And Billy Beane, too.
Both of them,
Billy Beane were a football GM.
Was kind of a money ball take by Brandon Beane, right? Like, hey, you can't pay everybody, so you got to find some things on the margins. Let's read some of the petties here on the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. Is my take on roster construction petty? It used to be intriguing. Now I'm pissed that it takes so long. Being over 50 makes me realize time is short. That is true. When you hit 50, you're like, man, you do. I thought about this back when I was in my 30s and the Red Sox were still trying to win their first World Series. I thought about my dad, who's a big Red Sox fan. And they just had the series where Aaron Boone hit the home run to break everybody's hearts. And I'm like, God, my poor dad is whatever age he was. I'm like, on average, he's probably only got like 20 more looks at this thing for the rest of his life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I do think about that sometimes.
That's where you see owners start to sometimes, you know, well, speaking of the Bills, Ralph Wilson kind of got to that point where he was towards the end of his days in his owners. I think he sold before he died.
Yeah.
Did he? Whatever it was. They started making some pretty aggressive moves. He was like, all right, I gotta get on this.
I want to see this. Yeah.
Take note, Jerry. I don't like what Jerry Jones.
Yeah.
Whatever the hell you're doing, that just ain't the plan, man.
Jerry's the opposite. Like, Jerry just waits to sign everybody. Like, you are not operating like somebody
who's
92 years old. No, he needs to speed it up. Yeah.
Operate with a little urgency.
Absolutely. Yeah. Lot of petty. I don't even know if I want to call it petty because I think a lot of it's deserved right now, but it's the petty cast, so I'll call it petty. Towards Jalen Green. Get Jalen off my team. He's been given more than enough time to prove himself. His ceiling is a sixth man. He just doesn't have that, wait for it, it factor. He doesn't have the it factor, Seth.
Yeah.
Nebulous.
Well, I don't even think he doesn't even qualify for the it factor discussion.
Correct.
You can't even have an argument about whether or not he's got an it factor. I would say, because there's a lot of people out there who still adamantly to the death defend Jalen Green, but if they think he's shown ever any kind of an actual it factor, then, you know, more than for one night, he's not even in the conversation.
Yeah. Text message on Ariante Ursary. I'm impressed with Ursary. Great size and strength, but a tackle. I can't quote Seth for sure, but a guard has shorter legs and arms and a bigger butt. If I was CJ Stroud, I would start thinking about my exit strategy.
Oh God! I didn't say that last. I didn't say that last part.
Yeah.
No, if you're saying I said that last part, I've never said anything close to that.
Yeah, they said I can't quote Seth for sure. So they.
I said no. I think the challenge of being a tall guy going down and playing guard is that your height can sometimes be a disadvantage at guard if you don't play low.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a guy like Ursary who does not have great knee bend, you can get away with that at tackle. Ideally, yes, everybody would play exactly like Laramie Tunsil as a pass protector, but he's not that guy. It's just harder to get away with that, the upright play style at guard, because you've got guys that can very much get up underneath your pads very, very quickly. At offensive tackle, there's space. So it's not that you desire shorter legs or shorter arms. It's just that you've got to be a certain type of guy to be a real tall guy and play guard, and I just don't see that with Ursary.
All right, that was your petty cast. Keep texting in, 713-572-4610. We'll circle back to the Rockets and their loss last night. Were the Texans trying to trade up for an unexpected target in the draft on Friday night? There are plenty of reports of them trying to trade up. Do we now know who they were trying to trade up for? We'll try to connect some dots coming up next. All right, it is zero secret that the Texans were trying to move up in the draft on Thursday night in round one. And I think a lot of the conjecture, Seth, was they were trying to move up for, you know, Tyler Booker going to the Cowboys at 12 overall felt like a spot that they might have been talking. The Cowboys themselves had said they've been talking to a few teams about big trades. A lot of people assume that the Texans might have been one of them. You started to see the offensive linemen, particularly guards, fly off the board in the Texans. Nick Caserio said it in the press conference afterwards. They were working the phones and nothing came to fruition. It takes two to tango to get a trade done. I think all the assumptions were that it was for either an offensive lineman or maybe Matthew Golden if a wide receiver started to slip there.
Yeah.
I don't think tight end was on the, you know, I don't think tight end was on the, was high up people's list of what they might trade up for. Although I had said the few days leading up to the draft that if Tyler Warren started to slip into the teens that I'd make a phone call, you know. But this was interesting. This was Ian Rappaport yesterday on the Pat McAfee show talking about Colston Loveland, the tight end out of Michigan that ended up going 10th to the Bears and going ahead of Tyler Warren. That Colston Loveland being the first tight end taken was not the favorite in this draft. And listen to who Ian Rappaport mentions in this report here.
Before the draft, I'm starting to hear that a couple teams are really, really active of trying to trade up. And so the teams, I heard the Texans were, and I heard the Broncos were. And, like, no one's ever going to tell you who they're trying to trade up for, because obviously they don't want someone else taking them. So the only thing I can tell is, like, when the calls stop, right? Like, if you're trying to trade up for someone, and then all of a sudden the calls stop, it's like, all right, well, you were probably trying to trade up for that guy. The Bears take Colston Loveland at 10, and a bunch of calls stopped. And I was like, wow.
Okay. So the implication there would be that the Texans were trying to trade up with maybe not with the Bears, obviously, but maybe trying to trade up into a range they thought they could get Colston Loveland, and then he goes 10th to the Bears, then the calls
is
cease.
He's talking about calls to himself or calls that he's getting reports of people.
Calls talk. Up to the people. He's reporting that teams were getting, this is how I interpret it, this is how it was interpreted online as well, is that the Texans and others were making phone calls to try to move up into that range there where they thought they could get, now you know, they could get Loveland. Right. Loveland gets picked 10th, and then the calls stop.
Okay, this is the only problem I have with that, is that that's also immediately after Kelvin Banks Jr. was drafted.
Yeah.
So Kelvin Banks gets drafted 9, Colston Loveland goes 10.
Yes.
I mean, like, okay, Ian Rappaport, great work doing all you do with the Nugget Hussy stuff and everything. But, like, okay, am I to believe that that 10-minute period was, like, there's a specific line of demarcation?
So I would even, I would even say, I know where you're going with it, Seth. I wasn't even thinking of Banks. I was thinking of Tyler Booker 2 picks later. You know,
stuff moves pretty quick.
Yeah. Like, can the timeline get messed up to where the calls, you know, the calls may have stopped right after Tyler Booker, but it's getting, your sources are conflating it with Colston Loveland at 10 instead of Booker at 12.
There's a time lag there. And so if people are calling specifically about that 10th pick and somebody was still calling the Bears after Kelvin Banks had been drafted, maybe he knows that the Texans were doing it.
Banks is the better example. I was thinking Booker at 12, but you're absolutely right. Like Banks, even if you go back and watch the drafts and just see how much time there was between those two picks, if it was only a few minutes, it could have been either one of those guys. You're absolutely right.
And I think that if you yes, they don't draft for need. I do think that a lot of teams trade for need. If it's a prospect they really like that they think they could round out the roster. And the way they're constructed right now, and I know very few people are happy about it, but Dalton Schultz, even after the George Kittle contract this morning, is still the 10th highest paid tight end in NFL history, which is also currently.
Yeah.
But the 10th highest paid tight end, you've got a draft pick from last year, you've got Brevin Jordan. I just don't know if they would – I'd be surprised if they were in that much in love with a tight end to trade up to the 10th pick overall to draft a tight end. I just – I feel it makes more sense that it would be Kelvin Banks or Tyler Booker. The Texans might have gotten word that – Booker was going to go to the Cowboys. Who knows why the calls stopped.
Yeah, and the calls could have been to teams at 15, but it's just once that guy
specifically to the Bears.
To the Bears,
right?
No, he was just saying a lot of calls. Trying, I'd be shocked if the Texans were trying to move into the top 10 for anything, given what the cost would be.
Daniel Jeremias and Jonathan Alexander, those two guys who don't put out a lot of nonsense out there when it comes to what they feel a team believe. Like Kelvin Banks was mentioned by both those guys multiple times about the Texans really like Kelvin Banks. Yeah. So it makes more sense that it's kind of cool that they were trying to trade up for Kelvin Banks. So the adult in me says, okay, but they didn't want to pay too much. Cool. The petulant child in me says, come on, look at the magnificent Gladstone.
Oh,
he did whatever it took.
Yes.
Trade away the entire draft for Kelvin Banks.
I need
Banks,
you
damn it.
To move up for Kelvin Banks and then at his initial press conference tell me how he's going to elevate the sport of football itself.
Yes.
And give me belief in myself, because football gives us all belief. That's what the magical Gladstone said.
Now, one thing that Caserio did say in one of his press conferences was that a lot of guys went in the first round, or a lot of guys went higher than you were seeing in the mock drafts and what have you.
Loveland
was
one of them.
And what the consensus was. And they weren't surprised by it. I wonder if Loveland was one of those guys. The ones that they weren't surprised by, that Nick wasn't surprised by. I wonder if Colson Loveland was. Calvin Banks went where people thought he probably would.
Yep.
In that range. Tyler Booker is the big one that I think a lot of teams, not just the Cowboys, probably were not all that worried about his combine performance and just said, no, we liked him before the combine. And we base that on how he played football and how he looked athletically while he was playing football. So I don't care if my 340-pound offensive guard can't run 40 yards really fast.
Right, right, exactly. I wonder what the most Nick Caserio would have done to move up was. Like, what was his, you know, when you're buying something, you know, you're on eBay or whatever, you've got a limit as to where you're going to go. Like in an auction, like, all right, this is the high, this is the furthest I'm going to go, you know, live auction, whatever. I'm not going to go more than $2,000 on this trip or whatever at a charity auction. I wonder what the, like, what was the limit of how much Nick would have given up to
What's
move
a fair
up
and, value for that?
To move up and get a guy, well, to move up from 25 near the top 10, I think would be probably a first round pick. Like next year's first. That's it. I'm just using the Deshaun Watson trade as a template, Seth. I know it's a quarterback, so maybe the math changes a little bit. They moved up from 25 to 12 back in 2017, and it was an extra first round pick. That's what the cost was to move up.
Yeah.
I would not give up a next year's first to move up and get any of the guys. To move up to 9 or 10 and get any of the guys that were not Calvin Banks, not the tight ends, not anybody, not Booker.
No, I don't think
anybody.
Any of those offensive tackles. They're all really, really good prospects, but I didn't think that they were the kinds that you just leverage your future completely on.
Yeah.
So I was intrigued that they liked Calvin Banks and that they were willing to trade up to get him. I'm glad that they didn't sell the farm for anybody, not just Calvin Banks, just anybody in this year's draft. It was just that kind of a, other than Travis Hunter and. And that's pretty much it. Travis Hunter, guys, where you're like, oh, yeah. This is the guy we need to change our football team, and I'm willing to do whatever it takes.
I think the max would have been an extra. They went into Thursday night with an extra 2, an extra 3, and an extra 4 next year.
Yeah.
If I had to say, like, the max, like, especially if, like, you're so tempted, like, boy, he's sitting right there, Tyler Booker, Kelvin Banks sitting right there, the max I would say would be an extra 2. And I think the one thing you look at on the big trades that Nick has made, you know, the trade that when they traded for Diggs, when they traded for Will Anderson, is that I don't think he's ever going to gut a draft to go get somebody. Like when he's made those moves, it's been when he's had a surplus.
Yeah.
He's had extra picks to do it, you know?
I wonder, too, with the Colston Loveland. So if we go to whether the Texans were trying to trade up for Colston Loveland, the tight end, or Calvin Banks, who went immediately before him. All I remember from the timeline of all of that was that I know the Bears must have gotten the pick in quickly because I was waiting for it. I had seen that the Bears made their pick, and I was waiting forever on TV for them to announce it. So I wonder if that, too, especially lends more credence to, okay, yeah, the Texans stopped calling after Loveland was taken, but it was also immediately after Calvin Banks was taken.
Yeah, I think your theory, that's the one that holds the most water to me. When you add up all the reports, leading up to the draft, you know, from Jeremiah, you mentioned Jonathan Alexander, all the conjecture that Calvin Banks was the guy. Yeah, like that's,
or to at me, least it's the Bears. It was leaked, and the report was out there way before it was announced. Relative to today's standards,
yeah, it's just a coincidence that Colson Loveland happened to be the next guy getting drafted. After that, I'm with you. If the call stopped, it's because Banks went off the board, which would maybe imply that maybe they weren't trying that hard to move up and get Tyler Booker, or Booker needed to get to a certain stage of the draft before they'd think about making phone calls. I have no idea. It's fun to connect the dots, though.
Well, yeah, because he started making calls again, he said, in the mid-teens, which is, lo and behold, when Gray Zabel, the guard, went off the board to the Seahawks with the 18th pick.
That's right.
At that point, I always forget to mention that Ibuka was still available there at that point, too. So Ibuka, Matthew Golden, and Donovan Jackson were all right there between 18 and 25.
Boy.
And that was when they started making calls in the mid-teens.
And the dynamic of two of those guys you just mentioned being Ohio State guys, too. You know, Ibuka, who would be a target for C.J. Stroud, and Donovan Jackson, who would be tasked with protecting C.J. Stroud. You know that, and the fact that Nick Caserio does not shy away from the fact that they talk to players about other players. It would stand to reason you would talk to C.J. Stroud about Emeka Ibuka and Donovan Jackson, and the dynamic of both those guys going somewhere else, and you back out of the first round altogether. I still have to guess that CJ is pretty happy with this draft, you know, from his perspective. You get two wide receivers, a third down back, and another offensive lineman in the building there.
I mean, one thing we know for sure that CJ is happy about, because he said it, was that he's going to be charged with more responsibility at the line of scrimmage. I think he's going to be more involved in pass protection and setting the protection. With Slowik, and I know this because Slowik himself said it, was they didn't do a lot of the pre-snap stuff, which, because, and you could tell by the fact that they didn't have any hurry or urgency to get out of the huddle. They just, Bobby's up there trying to draw up the perfect play. Now, CJ, you don't have to make any checks at the line of scrimmage. I got the perfect play coming for you. And they would get up to the line with 4 seconds left and get the play out. I think they're going to operate a lot differently this year. They're going to try to let CJ use his brain and identify things pre-snap and get them into better situations. So I think that alone is probably a good selling point to CJ on feeling that things will be better, that, hey, we're not going to be quite so primitive in the way we approach pass protection and the pre-snap operation. We're going to be more like the guys that you've liked and admired and watched, the true veteran quarterbacks.
All right, the Astros win last night. Jose Altuve, a big part of that. He had a two-run home run to give the Astros the lead that they never relinquished. Altuve is back doing talking about one of his teammates in somewhat the same vein he was talking about one of his former teammates after the season last year. We will explain coming up next.
That ball driven high and deep to left field. Altuve hits the community leaderboard sign basically on the train tracks. Train number 27 has just left Union Station. Astros lead 4-3.
That was good to see, man. There's at least some pop starting to you know, with this lineup. You know, Yordan and Yiner had home runs on Sunday. Altuve and Christian Walker yesterday. They put up 7 on Sunday. They put up 8 yesterday. Maybe this thing starts to break a little bit. I was looking last night, Seth. They don't have anybody in the starting lineup with an OPS of over 800 right now.
No.
Not a single person. Now, keep in mind, this was a team, and we were a little spoiled, admittedly, but this was a team that back, if you go back and look at lineups in the late teens, you know, 2018, 2019, even early into 2020 and 2021, like the year Yuli won the batting title was, I believe, 2021. And he was like the 7-hole hitter on that team. They routinely had multiple guys, like 4 or 5 guys with OPSs of high 800, low 900. Yordan be flirting with 1,000. They don't have a single player. If you're math checking me, Seth, I think I'm right on this, but if you're checking me,
no,
on
I'm
that,
not
I
checking it. Yeah. I was looking up.
It's fine if you are. I probably could use a second set of eyes. I did this very late last night as the Rockets were frustrating me in the early third quarter. I'm like, yeah, you know what I'm going to do? This will put me in a better mood. I'm going to go add up OPSs for the Astros. Terrible.
I was looking up an oddity I had discovered about Yiner Diaz yesterday, because at the time, I want to say he had a 700 OPS at some point recently, which is like a high 6. He's 685 OPS right now.
Yiner is, okay.
Yeah, which is below average, but given the fact that... No. I'm sorry. I apologize. He's not 685. In the last 14 games, he's got a 685 OPS.
Okay.
So slightly below average Major League Baseball. But you're like, okay, well, at the very least, the problem is this. In those 14 games, he's taken 0 walks. His on-base percentage is .241. It's just that he's had some multi-base hits finally, lo and behold, that his OPS gets lifted up.
Yeah.
It's not nearly as bad as it was at the very beginning of the season, but he's still not great.
If you have faith that these guys are actually, you know, like Yiner Diaz, are you comfortable enough with the body of work he had in 2022 when Dusty seemingly wouldn't play him, but he was still really good? And 2023, where he was one of the best offensive catchers in baseball. And I'm just using him as an example. If you have faith that, hey, this guy's just a way better hitter than what he is now, like the league hasn't figured him out, there's like 3 or 4 guys in the lineup that are like that right now. Like if they're 15 and 13, that's why I bring this up. And the pitching has been otherworldly. I get it. Like there's just as good a chance that the pitching regresses a little bit as there is that the hitting gets better here. I mean, just that's the way baseball works. I just think there's way more upside for the offense to get better with who they have than there is that the pitching, barring injury, is going to regress, especially if Lance McCullers, who, by the way, had another really good rehab start and seems to be getting close to coming back, you add him into the mix now, too. That's why I say that. Like, they're, I think they're 15 and 13 right now, if I'm not mistaken. That they're 15 and 13 and they're this abysmal offensively. Not a single guy, not a single player with an OPS over 800 on a team with Jose Altuve, Yordan Alvarez, Yiner Diaz, Christian Walker, Isak Paredes. Pena started to look like a more of a guy who can get his OPS up a little bit. None of them are over 800 and you're 15 and 13. You feel pretty good about that.
Right. Well, and the pitching has been phenomenal. In any given day you wake up and they're third or, you know, first, second, third in ERA on the pitching staff. I did the successful cherry picking with Yiner. In the last seven games, he's got a 720 OPS.
Look at that,
so
man.
Right around the league average, yeah. 240 batting average, yeah. Sean.
What made me
still
look,
no walks.
What made me that's just who he is, I think. What made me look it up was ironically enough, was Josh Hader getting another save. I'm like, Hader has been one of the best closers in baseball. They're, like, as of right now, you know, I like things like the All-Star game and stuff like that, Seth. I'm into accolades and honors. I'm like, right now, the only two guys would be Josh Hader and Hunter Brown, if the All-Star game were next week, would be locks to be on the American League team. They don't have a single hitter that's even close to being in a conversation. Unless they get voted in by the fans, they don't have a single hitter that's even close to being in a conversation about being among the best at their position in baseball.
Right. The you know, as far as the positive developments offensively is that, like, Jeremy Pena has made a lot of tweaks that have actually worked out this year.
Yeah.
And you know, I still have faith in the guys that you expect to be hitting better than they are right now. On the pitching side of things, I think Blanco, and you've touched on this earlier, you know, Blanco is a career 3.5 ERA guy. He had that magnificent stretch in the first half of last season, so we've seen that upside. But some of that was a little bit of luck, and that bore out in the second half of the season. But at the very least, because he's 31 years old.
Yeah.
You know, he's not,
kinda
he's
is
not
who he
young.
Is at
you don't
point.
Expect that. I know he's a late bloomer, but you don't expect that necessarily all of a sudden over the next 2 years he's going to make a bunch of drastic changes.
Mm-hmm.
But if that's the weak spot in your starting lineup, if the other guys that have kind of come out of that have gone through the Astros car wash can really do it, like, that's still better than an average major league pitcher.
Yeah, you're going to get Arrigetti back here soon. He had a good report on his thumb yesterday. So here was, and maybe McCullers too. Knock wood. Lance had a really good rehab start over the weekend. So that's he threw 71 pitches and he was really, really good. So we'll see what happens against major league hitting, probably sooner rather than later. Jose Altuve sat down with the media yesterday before the game. I like meddlesome assistant GM Jose Altuve. We saw it with Alex Bregman. I mean, hardcore with Alex Bregman. He was lobbying hard to get Bregman signed. Didn't work, obviously. Here was Jose Altuve just being asked a general question about Jeremy Pena.
I think he's more mature, and he's a guy that, you know, works hard, plays hard, shows up every day, willing to go and play, willing to learn. And when you combine all those things, you're going to have a great year. You know, you're going to become a superstar. And he's a very valuable player for us. And you know, I'm very surprised he's not signing to a long-term year with the, you know, deal with the Astros. You know, he's a guy that you really want him on your team for a long term. So.
Okay. You know who Jose Altuve is, Seth? He is somebody that we've talked about on this show within the last hour. He is an aging NFL owner is what he is right now.
That's what he is. He's getting desperate.
Jose Altuve is, what, 35 now? He's on his last contract probably. Now, he's won two World Series already, but it's been a little more painful since 2022. He wants a heightened sense of urgency and devil may care when it comes
to
spending. Yes.
He went to watch Riverdance this offseason.
Yeah.
Despite any potential restrictions that we didn't know about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Altuve is just like, all right, it's time to do this thing, and I'm going to speak out about it. But now the first time he spoke out about it with Bregman didn't work out.
It didn't work out. And they look, these are very different situations. Bregman was soon to be a free agent that was going to get $40 million a year. Pena is in a situation where guys like Yordan Alvarez, Christian Javier,
Alex Bregman.
Alex Bregman, Jose Altuve. Back in the day, all signed deals with arbitration years still remaining, you know, kind of buying out their arbitration years for a little bit of income certainty. It's worked out tremendously for the Astros on the Yordan front. It's not worked out great on the Javier front because of injury. I have to imagine the Astros have approached Pena about some sort of deal, and he's maybe like Kyle Tucker, willing to ride this thing out and see.
They
what
like
happens.
Operating that way.
Yes.
You know, now with Dana Brown, though, too, is Dana Brown going to operate in quite that same way? I don't know. That'll be he's obviously doing a lot of things differently than his predecessors. With Pena, Pena defensively has ironed out all of those things that were kind of frustrating and weird last year. Mm-hmm. Offensively, he's been very, very consistent, but you know that there's more upside in him. I wonder if Pena probably feels like, man, I haven't really shown the best version of myself yet. And they may have approached him, and Pena might just not feel like signing it just yet. He just wants to push it to however long he
plays.
He
plays a premium position, plays it well defensively. He'll do that. You know, he'll do that for a long, long time. Yeah, I could see that, where he's betting on himself for sure.
But he's also 28 years old. You know,
yeah.
So by the time he does get to free agency, he's up there.
Well, the other thing too, and I don't want to go too deep on this, just because it's not always a great radio topic, but it is worth mentioning here, guys that are thinking about signing contract extensions. There is a virtual guarantee, it feels like, that after not this season but next season, there's going to be a lockout. There's a new collective bargaining agreement coming up, and we'll see. I mean, baseball. The two sides have dug in against each other before. It's been a long time since they've had a major work stoppage. You know, they had the one a few years ago that, chopped off some spring training. But I think that may be another thing that some players are waiting to see, or maybe create a sense of urgency in doing it if there's a salary
cap. Just
get
it done so I'm not affected by this if there's a
whatever
year
happens.
Sometimes when these years come up, like MLB owners are curiously tight with the purse strings in free agency.
Yeah.
Which he's got two more years of control left after this.
Yep.
So he'd only be 30 when he's an unrestricted free agent. Once you get to that, he's got 3 years, including this one, of play time, and I feel like he thinks he's got much more in him.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say less than 50% chance that they actually extend him.
Yeah.
He's too close. He's not. When you get a younger guy like Bregman was, and you give him that a couple of years beyond arbitration, but it's really, really good money. But it like there's the payoff for free agency is so far off in the distance that I think it's tempting. Whereas it's just two more years.
Yeah, the closer you get,
still making good money, obviously. Yeah. Yeah. Before he's a free agent, I think he waits.
They'll make him and probably have made him an offer for sure. The question is, like, is it a suitable offer to pay? I think they try to sign all these guys and see if they'll bite. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. We head into the 9 o'clock hour. Let's circle back to the Rockets last night. I've got the three biggest reasons they lost that game. How fixable are these for game five? And now with the Rockets being down 3-1, there's a lot of you out there that are starting to already look ahead to the offseason. I hope they come back in this thing. But another name popping up on the radar this morning on the odds board for the Rockets. Would you do this, depending on what the price is? We'll play that little game as well coming up next.